Good morning. Today is Wednesday, January the 29th. Joining us this morning is Humboldt County Supervisor Mr. Wilson. Good morning, sir.
Good early morning to you.
Oh, you're not going to whine it's too early, are you?
I
thought supervisors started their day 5, 6 in the morning and went until 11, 12 at night.
Kind of an old school rocker. It's just that rock and roll lifestyle never sort of leaves you.
All right.
I'm a night owl in general. People get those emails from me at 2 in the morning. Oh, yeah, all the time. Yeah. This is kind of how I roll.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Well, I ought to have you listening to the stations and let me know if everything's okay at 2 in the morning.
Wasn't that when you
I'm not there, I hope.
Well, that's like when you have on all your alien shows and your Bigfoot hunters, and isn't that when that happens?
No, we don't do that. We've got the old Wall Street Journal.
Oh, yeah.
That is at 2 o'clock.
Like I said, aliens and Bigfoot hunters.
Yeah, business. Yeah. All right, smart guy. Why do we say that? Are you ready?
I am so ready.
This one actually might be teed up for you, but we'll go with it. Marionette. Where did the marionette?
There's another word behind
that. Wait a second. Wrong word.
Margarita? Is that what you're trying to say?
No. I
mandolin?
Believe it's that, but I'm not sure. No, I threw an extra word in there.
Who's it early morning for? Is it?
Have you? No, it is. It is Marionette. Okay. Well, I'm not big on France in French, so okay. Where did Marionette get its name?
Where did Marionette get its name?
Yeah, you can't say France because I just gave that one up.
Oh, okay. Well, if I can't say France, then.
Well, okay. Specific in France.
Specific in France. I'm going to say it came from southern France, where. They have some sort of tomato festival. I'm just going to go for it.
The old marionette species of tomato. Okay, it's right next to the Romas, right?
Oh, I was thinking margarita pizza. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
Back to the margarita.
It's Italian. From a commander of the French infantry.
In
the reign of Louis XIV in France, General Marionette.
Of course.
Remodeled the French infantry by instituting very strict discipline based on severe punishment. So severe that the French called a cat of nine tails a marionette. And the English adopted the term as a synonym for a strict disciplinarian.
And the cat of nine tails, isn't that some kind of whip?
Yeah, with little hooks at the end.
Yikes. Ouch.
Yeah.
That was terrible. Yeah. I'm glad I wasn't in the French infantry
kind of makes the stockades look like a cakewalk.
Things humans do. Okay,
yeah,
what else you got?
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to try to read another word this morning. I'll save that for tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Budget time, starting to come around a little bit. Are you ready for it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, having a good. Yeah, I'm gearing up. In terms of we had some. Pretty big issues at the Board of Supervisors at the sort of end of the year, with this, the wind farm project was just definitely super dramatic and just kind of existential in what it was. It relates climate change and cultural issues and all that stuff, and it was pretty draining from that perspective. And so, and kind of that perspective brings everything else into its frame currently. I'm prepared for this year. It's coming up. There's a lot of good stuff happening.
What do you look for? Okay, here comes Department Head Papstein. Yeah, I know. Worst case scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Marionette, I hope not.
All I have to do is look around this place, man.
Yeah. so that comes into play. Here I am. I give you the numbers and the summaries and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What happens then? What do you do after I make that submission of here's my tentative, and you got however many other departments that are in there too? Do you go through each one line by line? Do you try to?
I mean, if you're talking about
you're
talking about like the budget, or you're talking about we go through. We go through all of those that document in terms of what comes in. As a matter of fact, we when I say we, our CAO's office that basically deals with our budget just got a big award in its presentation that the our budget, the Humboldt County budget, in its format as it's, you know, laid out in all its policies, and if you look at this document both online or hard copy, is extremely thorough and explains everything in terms of like the policies that drive the budget. And I think that's and so Humboldt County got an award for that, a national award. And I think what's I think that what that reflects is that budgets themselves are a reflection of who you are as an agency or as a company or whatever that is. It's really it really reflects on, you know, the moral structure of what you're trying to get to and what you're where you're trying to go.
Well, sure, your priorities are always going to be
right. It's a reflection of that, and you know, our monetary system, the way that it is, and the way that humans have evolved money. You know, money's just a construct that then we use that to sort of weight our priorities. And I think we've done a very good job of doing that in terms of, you know, all the inputs. You know, there obviously it's not the perfect budget from my perspective, and it's not the perfect budget from anyone else's perspective. It's a compromise of sorts.
So when you get the document,
mm-hmm.
do you look granular at it? Do you look broad strokes and wait for a department head to come in before you ask the specific pointed questions? Do you ask those questions then of the CAO staff, who in theory has all that information in front of them so that I think it doesn't take up during the public meeting time?
I think that weighs differently for different people in terms of your priorities. And so some of us, like myself, will geek out on what are our policies related to climate change or land use policy or those sorts of things.
Areas of interest.
Yeah. And you might drill down a little bit more, but you always have to remind yourself, you know, sometimes you can get kind of hung up on things that are maybe a few thousand dollars here and there. It's a $400 million budget, right? And so understanding that you're supposed to hire people that are taking care of the details, and you can get kind of lost in the details sometimes, but you try not to as much as you can, as you're really trying to sort of direct the overall ship in its direction and make sure that, you know, our constituents are getting the services that we can provide.
KINS, News and Information Time, 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy Radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Supervisor Wilson. Mike, with the budget itself, the dollars and cents, I suppose that there are two different personalities. One is one, like you'd indicated, that wants to really get pretty granular with each of the budget items and try to go down, maybe not line by line, but to kind of get a general sense. And then there's the other, I guess, reference point that mm-hmm. has to be made that says, does this get us where we've agreed we want to be in 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
If you kind of get that intuitive sense, yeah. Okay, if not, okay, is your intuition wrong, or is the department head kind of swerving, perhaps, instead of going where everybody has kind of generally agreed where you want to go? How do you make those gut calls? How do you develop that sense, either that intuition is correct or that there may be a need to refocus?
You base a lot of that on what you see as the past performance of your decision-making processes and where they're going and how they've panned out. And you use that to project into the future oftentimes. I think we have strategic planning about
Well, we have it at once a year with the board, and we give just a general sense. We have a strategic plan. People can look at it online, and it gets readjusted annually. We evaluate how things have been going. We kind of look at some of the longer-term goals. We look at the shorter-term goals, and then we have those discussions with the CAO and her office. And the staff there helps to develop a budget that reflects that. And again, it's not just budget. I mean, it's also policies in general that we're looking at to move all those things forward. And we do dig down sometimes into the details. I mean, quite often, but they're often very issue oriented. And so things pop up, and then you're digging in, or if there's something like that. We try not to, as individual supervisors, direct staff directly because really need to communicate through the supervisors, through the department heads, because they're the ones that are responsible to us. And then ultimately, the department heads have to really look at the overall direction. I mean, we can talk to them about certain things, but really they're supposed to take the direction of the entire board. And so that's the dance that they do.
So when there is calm seas, mm-hmm. using a Mariner reference here, okay, not much question. When something causes a ripple mm-hmm. on the pond, let's say like this coronavirus.
Well, okay. It hasn't hit us yet, but okay.
Totally unanticipated, totally mm-hmm. out of the blue.
Yep.
It's not here, but it might be.
Mm-hmm.
How does that, as an example, factor into the budget process? We could say an earthquake, things that are unanticipated, but you know there's going to be some wild cards. Here it comes. Now, how do you react? To that, or how does the budget allow you guys? Or
well, our budget has some contingency associated with it, so we do have some surplus of funds that are set aside for these kinds of situations, and it's a certain percent, and I can't remember it off the top of my head. That you're supposed to have on hand, and we generally are in that realm. We'd like to have more of that. And so that's what you set aside because you can only set aside so much really to make that really work. And then beyond that, when you're talking about these sort of broader emergencies, well, then, that's why we have FEMA, and that's why we have other agencies that help out with these sort of bigger issues.
Just a reliance on the biggers to help out.
We're not by ourselves in those situations at all. So.
But if there was a flood in Humboldt County,
mm-hmm.
okay, FEMA might be there.
Right. Well, part of the problem, one of the reasons why we have those contingencies is we can lay out a lot of cash to fix a lot of things, even though they're eligible for funding, emergency funds from FEMA and other places where they may come from. But in the meantime, we got to pay the contractors to fix the culvert or clean out the something or whatever it is. And then it can take sometimes a few years to get paid back. And so it's really important that we have cash reserves to help maintain that. Just like any business, without that, we would have really big problems. And we have a pretty... we've had a balanced budget for some years now. It's balanced, but it'll probably be a balanced budget this year because that's the trend that we've been working on, and those reserves have been building, which is also good too. So, as much as we have struggles with various services we'd like to provide or wish we could provide. We also are working very hard to make sure that we have our retirement accounts are building, and we want to make sure that we have these reserves as well.
What is the status with the ADA right now? Is it chunking along on schedule?
It is. Yeah. Okay. Well, the schedule's always changing, but
demonstrable progress.
It has a schedule, and I think we've been performing very well with the things that need to happen.
And the regulators think that we're performing well?
I think so. Yeah. Okay. And again, we've talked about it in the past, it's helping us move towards a broader facilities planning process to try and actually get us into newer structures that don't have these issues and can provide services for everybody else in a more efficient way.
It's 8:30.
Locally owned businesses help our community maintain a distinct personality and to help increase tourism because we don't look like every other place. Small businesses also provide the ability to try on and try out items before you buy and get real expertise, saving you both time and money. When you shop, shop local.
Our award-winning camping department has the gear you need no matter what kind of camping you do. Come in and experience the many benefits of shopping with Pacific Outfitters.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Mike Wilson, Humboldt County Supervisor. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, REDEC, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, and Murphy's Markets. Mike, looking at different areas where the county can invest is one thing. Different areas where individuals can invest is totally different.
Yeah.
We talk about infrastructure pretty routinely.
Yep.
With the county, and whether it's budgets and infrastructure, or whether it's the hardscape in infrastructure. What are some of the things that are out there that you're looking at as far as new infrastructure needs in the area?
Well, as we seek to decarbonize, and that what that, you know, the term that we use for decarbonize means, we're really trying to reduce our carbon emissions. One of the biggest places we're going to be really seeking to do that, not just in this community, but worldwide, is in our transportation systems. So even in Humboldt County, half of the carbon production that we do is really transportation related. And the biggest way that we can, the three biggest ways we can decarbonize in transportation, one is mass transit, you know, using more mass transit and making mass transit more available and those sorts of things.
Do those work? And by work, I would suggest maybe 50% of the cost covered by fare in rural communities?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the thing is mass transit in itself is highly subsidized, for sure. I mean, that is...
That's a factor going in, isn't it?
That's a factor going in, and that's how it rolls. But we also, you know, we also subsidize our private car infrastructure to a great degree. I mean, you know, we don't pay to ride on our roads except for maybe through our taxes on the fuels, but we're subsidizing land. We subsidize that infrastructure in ways, in many, many ways. But so there's the mass transit. There's just basically transit less, you know, basically doing it less, moving around less, being more strategic about where you go and how you go and those sorts of things, being more efficient in where you're going. And then the other thing is electrification of our transit system, moving away from internal combustion engines and into electrification. And there is that is happening. It's moving forward in faster ways than one might imagine. And I myself am a new owner of an electric vehicle, and that has informed me quite a bit about, you know, what that infrastructure is, because it mostly is invisible to a
person.
Yeah,
you don't think about it.
You don't think about it unless you're using it. And I would say it has been one of the better investments I have made financially, and just for, you know, in transportation wise. It's been really great. I purchased a used electric vehicle, one that was 2017, a Leaf, not the sexiest car around for sure, but it has a range of over 100 miles. It was not very much money. It was probably a third of the cost of a new vehicle, and it had about 13,000 miles on it. And it
what
is,
happened?
Nothing happened.
No, I mean, why, it would seem, you know, only a couple years old and that small amount of mileage.
Well, what's really amazing about the used electric vehicle market is that many people, because it's such a new technology, have been leasing them. And so they're coming off.
Oh, so it's a lease buyback.
Yeah, so they're coming off their leases all over the place, and you can get them for cars with ranges of even up to almost 90 miles for less than $10,000. Some are even like $9,000, and these are amazing vehicles in terms of. Especially for commuting, and it can save people a lot of money. I think a myth that we or sort of what the Tesla, you know,
mystique
yeah. has, I think, in many people's minds created this idea that electric vehicles are for wealthy people or for, you know, but what's really turning out to be is that these things are extremely efficient in terms of their cost. And so people who are on a budget, people who are cost conscious should be really, I think, really be looking at this technology in terms of their daily commutes. You can get vehicles with, like I said, up to, you know, 90 miles or even, you know, more or less. But if your commute is only 20 miles or something like that, this is a vehicle. These vehicles, they have no engine, so they have no fluids. Their brakes are regenerative brakes, which means they're basically not brake pads, but they're actually creating electricity for the car when you're pressing on the brake. So there's no
magnets.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So there's no parts to really wear out except for tires. And so if you talk to the maintenance shops, you know, there's just not a lot of maintenance in these cars. The fuel costs are quite a bit lower. They're equivalents of like 120 miles to the gallon in terms of what you're paying to move those things around. And so really the parts that's missing in this is the infrastructure part. So it's where you plug them in, either at work or whether they're at home. And so, you know, many municipalities and many jurisdictions are creating policies that are encouraging, you know, EV, which is electric vehicle, EV ready infrastructure, which often is just a plug. Right. It's like
just a regular.
It's a 240 plug that you can plug into or have chargers available that plug into the car. And so working on getting that infrastructure going is going to be very helpful, not just for the environment, but it's going to really decrease the cost of transportation overall. And so especially for working people.
Has that technology moved into the commercial vehicles, you know, some of the delivery vehicles and things of that sort?
It has moved.
Probably in Europe, I would suspect.
Well, and no, in delivery vehicles here, too, in the United States as well. That's kind of the longer range market space for that. And so the range is going up every year. So where like my 2017 Leaf, it's standard range, you know, as a new in 2017 was 108 miles or something like that. Now the new Leaf is 150 miles with a upgrade to 230 miles. A 230 mile range is a pretty long range for a car. But again, those cars are probably a little more expensive with those longer ranges right now.
Can you swap that out into your rig?
I don't think so. Not right now. I mean, okay. There's a lot of information on the internet about, you know, blogs about where people are swapping things out and doing that sort of aftermarket. I'm not haven't quite got into the aftermarket zone of this. This is pretty new to me in terms of those sorts of things. But if you are a person that already has two vehicles anyway, which many families do because two people are commuting, if one of those vehicles is an electric and maybe, you know, with a shorter range and you have kind of longer range out of town vehicle, instead of having two of the long, then you're going to be saving a lot of money and a lot of headache by switching over to EV. So this is, I think, again, for working people, this is something that, you know, it should be on the palette of options.
It's 8:43.
Are you a business owner looking for financial or technical assistance? An entrepreneur looking to start a new business? The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission and the Small Business Development Center want to help. With business loans, classes, and one-on-one consulting, our goal is your success. We've been helping Humboldt County businesses for over 30 years. Visit us at 520 E Street, Eureka, the Prosperity Center, or find us on the web. The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission and Small Business Development Center. We're here for you.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Evier.
Yeah.
Mike Wilson.
New Evier. I'm a newbie at this, but it's but it's been super fun. Yeah.
With the infrastructure that you were talking about, certainly the counties in the country have not subsidized gas stations. I mean, that's an independent operator putting something
in. We subsidize that infrastructure all over the place.
Well, I mean, we could say the infrastructure, but the gas station operator himself doesn't get. So as we're
subsidize the fossil fuel economy like crazy.
Okay. Well, yeah. And that's what I was going to get to. Okay, now there's gas tax that helps to pay for the roads.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if there's no gas tax,
you have to figure out another way.
Yeah, and they're talking about putting the GPS on things, and you know the real monitoring Big Brother thing, which I think a lot of us feel very uncomfortable with. Is there a model in any jurisdiction, any country that you're aware of for the electric vehicles as a way to fund the roads, or is it do you see that it's just going to come out of the general fund and it'll be another aspect on what's going on, or however the state decides to do the state funding of that infrastructure?
Well, in general, I mean, there's two parts of that. One is, you know, what's the wear and tear caused by a certain technology? And so certainly the bigger and heavier your vehicle is, the more wear and tear it creates on a road. But the roads themselves have a life, and they also have just a certain, you know, they take up a certain amount of real estate. They take up, you know, they just to build them and have them, they have a capital investment no matter what you drive on them, whether it's a bicycle or...
Oh, right, and the shifting, and you got the pipes underneath
right.
And all that. Yeah, yeah.
So all that stuff, you know, as EVs, electric vehicles, become more prevalent, certainly then there will probably become ways that they need to be taxed in terms of their ability to pay for that infrastructure. I think that's coming. But I don't
probably at the purchase point or point of purchase.
I don't know where that'll happen. I would imagine it's probably going to be coming in form of what you're talking about, basically tracking mileage, because we're going to be seeing more of that for insurance purposes. We're going to be seeing that technology is coming. I mean, we're already tracked as it is by our phones. I mean, everyone's got a phone and that information is tracked at every level. So I think if we're really worried about that, we got a long ways to go to lock into
that. Do you drive with your phone on? I don't.
Well,
and I don't know. There goes another show. Thanks for coming by, Mike.
Yep.
Good stuff.
All right.
See everybody tomorrow.